WLFP Braddock.
Hello, diners and travelers and house hunters and bakers and candlestick makers, wherever you are. You're listening to On the Menu with Anne Haig. On the line is our first guest, and it's David Savageau, whose name should be a household word right now, since he's just released the 25th anniversary edition of Places Rated Almanac. Congratulations to on your 25th, David.
Why, thank you very much, Anne.
Now, this one is not Rand McNally.
No, Rand McNally hasn't been the publisher of my book since 1988. I've had five publishers, and this edition is the first one that I've published myself.
Huh. And how long between books?
On average, about 3 to 4 years.
Okay. Of course, I'm sitting here with this big fat book. I mean, it just boggles my mind. How many people do you have working on this thing?
Well, in the first edition, it took us about 4 years, and we had about six people working on it. Now, I've gotten it down to a fine point, so we just have about three people, and it takes about 18 months now.
Wow. Okay, so in other words, you'll have another one in 18 months?
We have a book on retirement coming this August, and then a book on international retirement coming next spring.
Yeah, I'd like that one.
Yes, I think that's going to be an interesting one. And the next edition of Places Rated will come out in the spring of 2009.
Okay, so Pittsburgh can have a good time with it.
It can enjoy it while it lasts.
Right, yeah, you know that we're broadcasting from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Yes. And I had a question. I read somewhere that you said that you got so much more mileage out of Pittsburgh because they took it so much more seriously that they used it for years.
Was that a factor? That was in 1985. I was surprised that when this edition came out, that there was such a big interest in it in Pittsburgh. I thought they'd gotten over and past being number one let's move on to other things. But here we go for round two.
Uh-huh. So, but that didn't factor into it, that you got a lot of mileage out of our being number one?
No, it never did. Although we can always say that places like Pittsburgh and places like Rochester that have just wonderful urban attributes and low cost of living and maybe low crime rates, that they have an edge. Lo and behold, here you have living proof right there in the book you've got.
Yes, now this book is, I can't read it. It's not exactly something you sort of read through.
No, it's a book of popular reference, and it's been a mainstay for people who have to move around the country frequently.
I see. I was going to say, who is the audience for this book?
Right, they would be people who might be retiring in Pittsburgh and considering whether they should go to Phoenix, San Diego, or Corpus Christi, or someplace in Florida. They might be a new graduate from University of Pittsburgh Medical School that's entertaining offers in Seattle or Denver or Newark. People that we have about maybe 7-8 million people who move between states every year, and a lot of them can make discretionary moves. That is, they can live wherever they want within limits. So this is for them.
Yeah, now your first paragraph, you point to Pittsburgh's Carnegie Museums. I think they're amazing.
Right, they are. This was something I learned 22 years ago, mm-hmm. That they are so splendid that the Sun Belt communities like Orlando or Houston or Las Vegas, they couldn't afford them. They couldn't buy them. This is something that...
What is it now? Is it Dubai or Mumbai where they're building a city and they've created a Louvre or something?
Yes, that would be Dubai.
Dubai,
in the Emirates. Okay. Yeah, they are absolutely wealthy. This is the Hong Kong of the 21st century.
I see. Okay. So, but to do that, you've got to build in you have to do instant culture.
Yes.
Uh huh. Now you have your searching for normal people.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, that there are firms that do psychographic studies of populations, and for marketing purposes. I mean, where will the next Campbell's soup blend sell? Would it be better in Peoria or Asheville, North Carolina?
Uh-huh.
Well, over time, they've realized that there are normal people, and these make really good test markets.
Where was Pittsburgh in this?
I would say that Pittsburgh is probably ranked somewhere in the center. Pittsburgh is a shade wealthier than normal, but a shade less in terms of education. I'm saying like the 99th percentile.
Uh-huh.
And, also, it's made a rapid shift from blue collar industrial employment now to white collar service and healthcare and education. So it is not as normal as let's say Syracuse, the one that uh-huh. comes out on top in psychographic studies.
Well, I can tell you when I did the USA Today used to do 8 regional stringers.
Right.
And I was one of them in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and it was always the off trend. It was never matched any of the other cities in the 8
uh-huh.
regions.
Uh-huh.
So, no, you don't have anything about, like, restaurants, do you?
Oh, yes.
Where is it?
That's in the ambiance chapter, chapter that you have.
Okay.
What we've done.
Oh, here it is, good restaurants.
Right. What we've done there, we've taken all of the restaurants that are rated by AAA, because they're the ones that do it nationwide, including Alaska and Hawaii. No one else does it. Mobile does the continental USA, and Zagat does selected cities around the country. Anyway, AAA has rated almost 10,000 restaurants, and we went through every one of them. Believe me, it took us quite a few days to do this, to locate them by metro area.
Uh-huh.
And so now it's possible to say which metro areas have highly rated restaurants among all the restaurants that are located there.
I don't see a graphic on that. Is there one on?
No, you would have to look at Pittsburgh or any other metro area's profile. I can tell you that Pittsburgh gets 5 stars.
For what?
For its good restaurants, because in counting them all up, it has 178 restaurants in the 7-county area that are rated by AAA out of almost 3,000 in the area. So that's pretty good, and some of them are quite highly rated.
Wow. Okay. And now you would know the answer to which is the better restaurant city, New York or San Francisco?
Well, I would have to say New York,
okay.
But another way to put it would be which metro areas have the most highly rated restaurants, say per capita, and that would be places like Santa Fe.
Oh,
or,
right.
Some your Tony tourist destinations, for example, Scottsdale, Arizona, or Palm Beach, Florida.
Uh huh. So when people are looking at this, They're weighing sort of averages, kind of.
Right.
Because, what I couldn't figure out is how we could be the most livable city when, in fact, we came out to be in the middle of just about everything. It's the most mediocre city.
It's not a mediocre city.
No, I like it a lot, actually.
No,
I wouldn't live here.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that. I don't think you'd live there if you thought it was a mediocre city.
Right.
But the way to characterize Pittsburgh is that it's the triumph of the above average. No home runs in any place. It's not anyone's idea. There's no warm beaches.
Dinner.
There's no beautiful weather year round. It's not loaded with nice people every day, 24/7. That's what people's dream town is, and it doesn't exist.
That's good.
But this is livable.
Yes, I wasn't questioning the award for Pittsburgh. I was questioning what you end up with if you just average everything out. The
right.
system
well,
actually
yeah,
weighed it.
That's what we've done. That's how San Francisco would come in number two. Even
now,
though
is that number two?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It comes in. It has one big problem, which Pittsburgh doesn't have, and San Francisco is the most costly area for housing.
Terrible.
Yeah, so, but aside from all of that, in averaging things, it comes out number two.
Okay, and who's number three?
Number three is Seattle.
Oh, see, my husband always wanted to move to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't like the weather.
The weather in Seattle?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not for a depressive, let's put it that way.
See, that's it. I have that, whatever that thing is for sun deprivation.
Right.
Light deprivation, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why Seattle's not high on my list.
Right.
I mean, do you live in New York?
No, I live in Washington.
In D.C.?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we used to live there. Now, that's a nice place to live.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is indeed.
But it's also expensive.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
But what one can do without
a crime
car
rate
here
is pretty bad.
Yeah, and it's there's so much to do, and a lot of it is free, as you know.
Yes, yes. Now we enjoy the real downside to our living there was we had house guests all the time. I mean, just constantly.
That's so, right. You live in Washington, you better expect
exactly.
It.
I said there was a wonderful little guidebook that said things like when your friends are visiting the Capitol. You know, then around the corner, there's a little coffee shop. You can sit and wait for them to finish their tour.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
That is a good one. Or have a just one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, that's...
You know.
No, we set up the Hague Hotel when we lived there, I remember. Mm-hmm. But did you encounter some major surprise this time around, or you probably just pretty well...
No, I'm really pleased at how well all the metro areas are doing. They're right. Getting better.
Yeah. Could you hold on for
sure.
A minute while we take a break, and then
sure.
We'll come back. Okay, so take a break.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go. Fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Hey, kid, over here, inside your radio. Name's Ralph. I'm an energy hog. Hey, if you're going to waste energy in your home, I'm going to pig out on it. Anyway, I got a deal for you. There's this new website called energyhog.org. Forget about it. It teaches kids how to get rid of us energy hogs. So you promise not to log on to energyhog.org, and I promise not to eat your radio. Deal?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
EnergyHog.org. Forget!
Welcome back. Don't forget to check our website, www.onthemenuradio.com. See what you can listen to the programs. You can look at photos of us. And we're talking right now to, or I am, because it's Ian Hague and I'm on my own, to David Savageau. Did I do that right, David?
Yes, that's correct.
Of the Places Rated Almanac. We have also, we're joined by Mark Izzo, or Itzo, Mark?
Izzo.
Izzo, and in Italian it would be
It would be Itzo, actually.
Yeah, Itzo. Anyhow, Mark, I'm from Cafe Acapella Gourmet Coffee Bars. We were just... Mark, ending up with our discussion about Places Rated by David was telling us that I asked if he had any surprises in this go-around, and he said most of the metropolitan areas are holding up right.
Oh, yes, Yeah, they're doing better. The commuting people are commuting more, but they are more affluent, and pollution seems to be disappearing. Crime is way down, as that's been in the news for a long time. And important things and concerns of people now are preserving the past and historic buildings, and also boosting the arts and culture.
Well, this is great. You've presented a very thoughtful case for this reference book, The Places Rated Almanac. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. PlacesRated.com.
Okay. Listeners, you have it from the man who spends his life studying cities now. And I'm sure that it's going to be a very useful tool for all of us. Thank you for calling us, David.
Well, thank you, Ann.
Okay. Let me know when you move.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Now, listen, Mark S.O., you've just about destroyed my life with these bars.
Sorry about that. It wasn't our intent. We're trying to make people's lives better, not destroy their lives.
Oh, would you just explain what this is? I mean, I just can't believe it. I keep looking. I keep it in the refrigerator. Are you supposed to keep it in the refrigerator?
In the summer, it helps keep in the refrigerator, but you don't have to. It depends on if you like it to be a little more melty in your mouth, or if you want it to be a little more firm. But it's meant to be kept at room temperature.
Oh, okay, because it came in a perishable box. My husband put it in.
Yeah, because it's so hot out this time of year. It's summer's coming earlier every year, and just like chocolate, these coffee bars will melt. But I think we should take a step back at first and tell people,
please
what's
do.
So unique about this product. And
it's
what
just
is
fabulous.
Coffee bar.
I mean,
yeah.
I hope that you're not. I hope that it's really not very many calories, because I can't resist this. And I'm not even a sweets person. I don't even like candy.
Well, the twist here and what's unique about this is that it's a new type of food. And it's fascinating. It's actually a bar that's made from coffee beans. So it's truly a coffee bar. A lot of people say, what the heck is this product? Well, the best way to describe it is that it's a coffee bar. But think chocolate. But there's no cocoa beans in this product. So
see, why didn't somebody think this up before? I mean, it seems obvious.
It's interesting. You talk about the history of this, and why didn't somebody think of this before is fascinating, because if you look at the culinary history of chocolate and coffee, they're kind of fellow travelers, but they've really, coffee hasn't really been consumed as a solid form like chocolate had. So chocolate, though, originally was a drink, and it was a drink of the Aztecs and the Incas used to drink coffee. You used to drink chocolate, and then it wasn't until the Europeans that they took this drink. When it was first brought over to Europe for several years, it was still consumed as a drink, only by royalty. And then it was converted into a solid form by an English company, actually. And then we've begun this long love affair with chocolate as this solid food that we eat. And that was in 1847 when the world changed and the English decided to make a solid.
Yeah, I thought
chocolate.
That was amazing. I thought it was much earlier than that. Yeah.
No, you would never believe that. Now, while the cocoa bean came from the Americas, the coffee bean actually came from Africa, and it crossed the ocean in the other direction. It's always been a beverage. It was, other than when it was first discovered, it was actually eaten by goats. As that fun story about how the goat herder observed his goats eating the coffee cherry, which has the bean inside of it, and it had a stimulatory effect on the goats. And then they began to brew a drink from these beans. And, the beans then have been consumed as a drink for centuries after that, and they stayed as a drink. And it wasn't until really we decided to try and say, what would happen if you used some of the same thinking that makes a cocoa bean into a chocolate bar, and we're going to make coffee beans into a coffee bar, that it's become a food. And we were amazed the first time we made one of these bars at how good it tasted.
Well, who's we now?
Well, the people here at Acapella Gourmet Foods were actually were led by a rather visionary woman named Kathy Ninnis, who had this idea. And she's
the one I've been
and,
corresponding with, right?
marketing guru, and she actually recruited me, and I'm an old-time chocolatier. I worked my whole career in the chocolate industry, learned from some of the finest chocolatiers in the world the ins and outs of making chocolate. And when she approached me and said, I'd like to make a coffee bar, I said, well, you know what, that's been done. You can go out there and you can buy any chocolate company has their espresso bars and their cappuccino bars and things like this. And she said, well, what are those? I said, well, typically you'll take a dark chocolate and you'll add a little bit of coffee flavoring on top of it. And in the finest ones, they'll actually put real coffee beans into the product. And we went out and we tasted these different products, and none of them taste anything like coffee. They really have just been named coffee bars or espresso bars, and you're really just flavoring dark chocolate with a little bit of coffee. So what we did was remove the cocoa bean completely, and we take our coffee beans, we roast them fresh, so they're nice and fresh, and then we mix them with milk and with sugar, and we take cocoa butter, which is the fat portion of the cocoa bean, right, and indeed what gives chocolate its melt-in-your-mouth characteristic, and we mix that with the coffee bean. And we leave out the cocoa beans altogether. And what that does is allow the true flavor of coffee alone to come out. And that indeed is why the product is called Cafe A Cappella, which the translation
from
Italian
Coffee
performed alone. Because when we first made this bar and tasted it, we're like, the key is leaving out the chocolate. That's how you make a truly good coffee bar. Leave the chocolate out. And again, it was incredible. The first batches were made only 2 and 3 bars at a time.
It was
very crude equipment that mimicked some things that the chocolate industry uses, and they would mix for hours, and all different recipes we came up with. And when we finally got it right, we were just amazed at the smoothness, the richness of the coffee bean, everything it had to offer. And you're right, it was amazing that nobody had done this before. But the key is that all the people within the chocolate industry, and myself included, it never occurred to us to make a bar just from coffee beans. It took somebody from outside the industry who looked at the world in a different way
to say,
I don't want to make a chocolate bar with some coffee in it. I want to make a coffee bar. And that's
Now, is it my imagination, but do you get more of a jolt from that than you would from even just a cup of coffee or a chocolate bar?
Well, certainly you get more of a jolt from this than you do from a chocolate bar.
Okay.
Coffee has significantly more caffeine than chocolate does, so you certainly get more of a jolt from it. We believe that just from tasting and watching people's reaction to these bars, you probably get more of a jolt than even from a cup of coffee. And I think it's related to, although we have no scientific evidence to that end, I think personally that it's related to the fact that you are actually eating the whole coffee bean. The whole coffee bean is in these bars. It's been milled very, very smooth, so they're very tiny pieces of coffee bean, and you don't detect them on the tongue. They release all the flavor, and you do consume the whole bean, whereas when you're drinking a cup of coffee, as you know, you grind up the bean and you pass water through it,
and
that's what you drink. So you're not getting all the caffeine from
the coffee.
So
it's kind of, it's like legal speed.
It's nature's truest way to get energy. I mean, again, the coffee bean is, there's a lot of caffeine put in a lot of things in our food supply. It's all put there, you know, artificially. It's not naturally put there. The coffee bars, and we did not intend this at all. We intended to make an incredibly wonderful tasting confection that celebrated the taste of coffee, and we succeeded in that, but we inadvertently made the best tasting energy bar that you're ever going to have.
It does
give people a nice little lift. Yeah.
Oh, we get tons of those energy bars and drinks. I mean, I think we're all exhausted as a culture at this point, because I mean, why else do we need all these things? That and exotic tropical berries and things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that. You have 4 different flavors.
Yes. Well, you know, another thing that's just been a lot of fun about working in the coffee area, again, I said my heritage is from chocolate, is when you look at the coffee area, it's an area where it's long been known and appreciated that there are different types of beans and different types of roasts, and the consumer understands this too, and that you can make different coffee drinks. So what we did is we looked at this thing we had created and said, wow, now we can have all the same flavors that you would get when you go to an Italian espresso bar. And your purest flavor is your espresso, and that has the most coffee. And espresso is obviously just coffee, and it's very, very, very strong. Now, when you go to the realm of eating coffee, you cannot eat just coffee. It's way, way, way too strong and way, way too concentrated. So all of our products do contain milk and sugar to dilute out the coffee, so it's palatable. But the espresso flavor of our products has the most coffee in it. So
I think that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah, it has two full shots of espresso
as
the whole bean in every bar of espresso serenade, we call that one. All our products, it's fun. We have this kind of musical thing going on because obviously Cafe Acapella,
Acapella
thought was a good name. And the espresso is espresso serenade. And again, it's all the same coffee that we use. We have what we call an acapella espresso blend. We've developed our own blend. It actually contains beans from 3 to 4 different regions of the world, Colombia, Brazil, Papua New Guinea. A number of different beans are in there, and they're blended, and then they're roasted very dark in the Italian style to make an espresso blend. As you know, espresso is really a way that you prepare coffee. It's
right.
Not a specific coffee bean. So we have our espresso blend, 2 shots of espresso blend in our espresso bar. And that's almost analogous to dark chocolate. So it's going to be very dark, very strong. And then what would be analogous to milk chocolate would be our cappuccino. And it's just like in a coffee house. They would put less espresso, typically 1 shot of espresso in a cappuccino, and more milk. And that's exactly what we have in our cappuccino bar. And that results in a lighter flavored coffee. It results in a much creamier, milkier type of a product. So that's our cappuccino, and that's favored by a lot who are not black coffee drinkers.
I'm hot for this espresso serenade.
You like espresso serenade?
Yeah. Listen, we're going to have to take a break, so I want to make sure that we get in your website where people
can. Absolutely. The website is www.acapellafoods, acapellafoods.com.
Well, listeners, go get some of this. It is spectacular. Mark, thank you for talking to us.
Thanks a lot, Anne. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we've got to take a break now, but I enjoyed talking to you, and I'm enjoying the candy.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Take care.
We'll take a break now.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding. An old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers. Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
We usually are very cautious with our investment money.
Then we got this email about this great deal on the internet.
They promised us a 75% return on our money in 90 days. We couldn't resist.
That was a mistake.
For information on avoiding investment scams, call the Pennsylvania Securities Commission. 1-800-600-0007.
Sponsored by the Pennsylvania Securities Commission. Edward G. Rendell, Governor.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann Haig. We have two authors, or they're co-authors, and we have one on each line now of this book that I mentioned last week that we were going to be talking about, the ultimate grill book. I've never seen anything quite like it. This is Andy Schloss and David Joachim.
Joachim, yes.
Joachim, okay. And it's called Mastering the Grill, the Owner's Manual for Outdoor Cooking. And I'm telling you, I have never seen anything as thorough as this book, which addresses not just recipes and some techniques, but the science behind cooking with fire and heat. You leave nothing to the imagination. Who was this written for?
Well, thank you very much. We tried to be as comprehensive as possible in the book. It's really written for just about anybody who's grilling. Anybody who isn't sure about basic techniques of direct grilling, where you just put something over a fire, or more complicated things like grilling right in the coals, they'll find something that will be useful in this book, and lots of different recipes for different tastes and skill levels.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's also really good for anyone who's really into grilling, because it'll tell them all the information behind the things that they're already used to doing, why they've been searing steaks over charcoal rather than over gas. Why a rub really makes things makes pork juicier. So I think all of those things that people do just by rote, the explanations are in the book.
Yeah, I mean it's. I'm sorry that Peter's not here this week, because he's the griller in our house. I mean, it's not an unusual thing to have in a household, but I mean he tackles whole animals on the grill all the time.
We talk about that a lot, actually, with people.
Yeah.
Not as many women grill, but women do grill, and I think that this book
is
appropriate for women who love to grill, too. There's an entire chapter on vegetables, if women are like to grill vegetables. I don't know if it's a meat thing with women or what, but...
I think that women have commandeered the kitchen, and so if guys want to play around with cooking, they go outside.
I think
that's it, but you have this, introduction, the science and mechanics of grilling. Then you have part one, the Grill Master's Manual, and that's mastering your equipment, mastering your technique, mastering your ingredients. Then you move into part two, the Grill Master's Recipes, and then you have Table of Equivalents, Bibliography, Index. This is an incredible book.
Thank you.
I don't know how to explain without somebody seeing this, that every single thing that anybody could have ever wondered about is in this.
Yeah, there are over 300 recipes in the book. Every recipe has instructions for gas and charcoal and wood, because we use all different fuel sources for cooking, for grilling. And there are desserts. There's everything from burgers to grilling whole spring lamb on a grill. There's French toast. There's gingerbread. What else, Dave?
Pig,
yep.
You have that
pig.
We've done that a number of ways. We had an above ground stone thing. Then we dug a pit for and put the thing in there. And then we had a pit with the coals and then the pig on the spit.
Right. Were there differences?
It was a lot of work. That's all I can tell you. The preparation for getting the setup was what was the work.
That's a really big grill project. I think most people are grilling things for speed day to day, but there are people who really want to get into it. And we have a whole chapter called The Big Kahuna that we've done massive grill projects, but the projects that can take that you can really work on and are really impressive. That what we've tried to do is make the work show, so that if you're going to work really hard, people are going to see it.
Oh, good. That's good. I spent some time in Tonga, and they did a native feast, and this was on the beach, and they buried everything. They had some kind of a big cloth that they put different meats in and chickens and stuff, and they wrapped them all up and buried them in the sand, and it just sort of cooked all day. And then finally, and they had pig, but everything was
Actually, that kind of cooking is a form of steaming, because what happens is when you wrap it with leaves and you wrap it with wet cloth, the moisture in those vegetables is going to create steam in the pit, and you're going to get this real sort of succulent, moist thing. The results are going to be really different than doing something on a grill, where you're going to get a lot more browning. With it. And the trick with cooking whole animals on a grill is you need to keep the heat really, really low so that they brown very gradually, because it's going to take several hours for them to cook through. So you don't want to get the browning happening too fast, or it's going to char on the outside before it's done through.
Here you have a whole chapter on mastering marinades, mops, brines, rubs, wet paste, glazes, sauces, and dips.
Yep. One of the exciting things, I think, for most people in grilling is the ability to develop complicated flavors in a really simple way. And so we go through all of the different flavoring systems that you can do in grilling. Marinades are a way of infusing flavor into fairly tender foods, like fish and chicken work really well with marinades, or vegetables work well with marinades. Brines are another way of doing it, except you would want to use anything that is low in moisture, like pork is great for a brine, or chicken breast is great for a brine. Rubs are better for denser foods like roasts or a steak, something like that, where no flavor is going to get really deep into the food, but you're going to get a real strong crust of flavor with the flavor of the meat inside.
And then you even have injected.
Injecting things. We do inject foods. Mostly that's for big things like roasts. A whole turkey we might inject, because the one mistake I think that people make with flavoring is they think they want the flavor to go all the way through the food, which is that's sort of an idea in marinating, when actually you don't want that. If a marinade actually did go all the way through a piece of meat, you would be pickling it. It wouldn't taste good at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
What you really want is the marinade to sort of just flavor the surface and have a juxtaposition between the flavor on the outside and the flavor on the inside. The reason you would inject something is if you have a really big piece of meat, like a whole turkey or a big roast, and then you do want to get some of the flavor deep in the meat, because there would be so much meat that would get unflavored if it was just on the surface.
Yeah, but Peter's been using this Jacquard thing. You know about that?
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, and we had the guy who runs that company on the program, and we had never heard of it, and apparently it's very common in chefs' kitchens.
Yes, yeah, well, that's a way of quickly marinating something. I still don't think that the marinade goes all that deep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he jacquards everything anymore.
right.
No,
it's a toy. It's a new toy.
Boys like toys. And you have sections here on, I call them flavor profiles, but you call them families?
Yes. Oh, you mean the cuisine flavors?
Yes.
One of the...
I think that's brilliant. I think this book is absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
You're great. We think you're brilliant. one of the ways of understanding flavor, and I think that flavor is such a big area and a way of breaking it down so it's more understandable, is to think about how different cuisines flavor their foods. Because one of the ways of understanding cuisines is to understand what the flavor systems are. So if you are working with tarragon, wine, and butter, you're obviously in France. If you're working with garlic, tomatoes, and oregano, you're in Sicily. And if you're working with garlic, tomatoes, and basil, you're in Genoa. So that by sort of almost stereotyping the flavors of a region, mm-hmm. you can instantly know what flavors go together.
Right. See, that's great. This is something that you've simplified. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, I've been cooking for a long time, and it's very hard explaining to people who don't cook about that. That's mm-hmm. It sort of becomes ingrained, and it's just intuitive. But
yeah,
if you don't know it, you don't know it.
Yeah, it really happens from eating different kinds of food.
Right.
You realize the different flavor systems that you'd get. And it is sort of an interesting thing to see it all laid out in a chart. I think it makes it very clear.
Right. Now, you do some really interesting things with breads and doughs and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the...
I always admired people who could do pizzas on the grill.
Well, there's a trick.
Okay. There,
and once you know the trick, it's not hard.
Okay.
You make a regular pizza dough.
Yeah.
Roll it out to whatever thickness you want.
Yeah.
And then put your grill on medium, not real high heat, and grill one side of the pizza. And that's going to be the side that gets the filling on it. So you're going to really cook that side pretty well. Then turn it over and put your ingredients on that side. That the dough will be almost cooked through by the time you do that. So that when you then put your filling on, that will keep that the top side sort of weighted down because the filling's on. So when you put when you flip it over and have the raw side against the fire, it will start to rise up. But the filling's going to keep the center weighted down, and it's going to cook through well. The problem people have with grilling with any dough is they either cook it too fast. And then it will burn. Or with pizza, they don't cook it on both sides, and then it will stay sort of gummy. But this is a really good trick. It's actually fairly easy once you catch on to the trick.
Okay, how about shortbread s'mores?
Shortbread s'mores. The shortbread is just a cookie. It's not grilled. That one is just you're really grilling marshmallows, and we put Nutella on the shortbread,
oh,
and then
clever.
You sandwich it between with the marshmallow on it.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at this photograph of artichokes. Do you wrap them in foil? I can't see.
The one near the back of the book.
Yes.
That is
grilled garlic chokes.
Garlic chokes, right. Those are artichokes, and you need fairly small artichokes for that. And you just stuff them with garlic, olive oil, I think there's some lemon in there, and then wrap them in foil. And that's a form of indirect grilling, where you would set up, if you're working on charcoal, you would split your charcoal bed so that it's on the sides.
Well, I want to talk some more about the setting up of this bed, but we need to take a break now. Can you hang
on?
Okay.
Sure.
We'll take a break.
You take your 6-year-old to the playground. You watch her go down the slide, then run over to the swings. Another mother strikes up a conversation. You take your eye off your daughter for just a few seconds. You look back at the swings. And she's gone. Your heart drops into your stomach. You jump up, your eyes searching. You cry out her name.
Lily? Lily?
From the top of the slide, you hear a voice.
Mommy, watch me!
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
A message for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
If you find that you have to drive at night, travel in well-lighted areas when possible.
Make sure your headlights are clean.
Keep your windshield clear, both inside and out.
Avoid driving at night in the rain or other foul weather.
Also, try to avoid busy streets or other stressful situations.
It's what makes an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick.
Who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela.
Who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
Welcome back to On the Menu. You're listening to Ann Haig talk to Andrew Schloss and David Joachim. I did it, didn't I?
That is it.
About their super masterpiece of a book called Mastering the Grill, the Owner's Manual for Outdoor Cooking, which is like the only book you ever need again in your whole entire life. And I mean, I'm saying this from the perspective, you guys, that I get so many grill books. We've interviewed just about everybody imaginable on grilling. And it's just when I saw this one, how it had a different approach altogether, I figured this would be a great book to, great to interview you guys about this book and promote this book. So, anyhow, we were talking about grilled garlic chokes. Andy was explaining that it was indirect grilling, which is the first time that we actually mentioned there are different techniques appropriate to different kinds of cooking. Who would want, David, do you want to tell us about this?
Sure. Yeah, direct grilling is just cooking directly over the heat, but indirect cooking is cooking away from the heat. So you, on a gas grill, for instance, put the food over an unlit burner, and the other two or three burners, however many you have, are lit. And then you close the lid, and that turns your grill into something closer to an oven. Mm-hmm. So it's indirect grilling. But we use other techniques in the book as well, like grilling on a plank, which is often done with salmon, or grilling right in the coals, right in the hot embers, which gives you a great crust on steak and is really good for dense vegetables, too, like sweet potatoes. And the smoke, the outside, the skin just chars completely. But then the smoke goes through there into the flesh, and you eat it like a jacket potato and get wonderful flavor inside of that vegetable.
And now, I was wondering, is it really grilling when you use, like, a pot and stick it on there? Or a paella pan?
We would say it's modified grilling. We think that grilling is anything that can be done on or with a grill. So if you're using a grill skillet, you're doing it on the grill. You're not doing it on your range. So it is grilling of some kind, but it's definitely modified. I mean, the true grilling, we believe, is with the least amount of stuff, usually it's metal, between the food and the heat.
Yeah, a grill skillet or a grill wok or a grill screen still allows flame to get to the food. And I think that's the issue, where if you really had a paella pan on the center of a grill, I think the way you would use that is if you wanted to deliver smoke into the fire, you could definitely smoke the
food.
Now,
I think the traditional
kind of thing.
Yeah, the traditional cooking of the paella is, I think, embedding it in the coals.
Oh, sure.
It isn't, exactly.
Recipes,
yeah.
Traditional recipes are right in the coals.
Right.
I think there has to be a grill of some kind, something that will let, like Andy was saying, that will let some flame and smoke through. But that kind of cooking method done right in the coals, I mean, that's a very traditional use of that.
Mm-hmm. It's really a very primitive form of cooking, and it's a way of using the fire as an oven almost to surround, and it's fairly burnt down coal, so it's surrounding it just with the warmth so that it cooks fairly gently, which is similar actually to indirect grilling, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too, but you do get some of the flavor.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's great for polenta, too, actually, cooking right over or in the fire. Terrific, because you get some charred bits on the edges, and it's delicious.
You have grilled tomato pies. You have vanilla cauliflower. But, of course, Andy, I know your work. I mean, you're a food writer anyhow, right?
Right, so is David. David's
David
actually done
is
more
too.
Than me.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I often do collaborative projects, and I have my own books as well. This is my 31st book project overall, over many different hats as an editor and an author and collaborator.
Oh, see, it says here you're a pyromaniac.
That is also true.
Yeah, that's a professional standing.
Oh, this is it. The book that I did note that you wrote that I think is would be very valuable is Food Substitution Bible. That I'd like to see that one. Yeah, that must be useful, huh?
That's a good reference book, yeah. And Andy and I did work on another book together, and this book is our first real collaboration where we worked hand in glove throughout the entire project.
Well, how long did it take to do this book?
It was about 18 months active.
How much?
18 months.
Shoot, it looks like it would take a lot longer than that.
Yeah, it was about 3 years from the beginning to the end, you know, from the time we started thinking about it and going through, proposal and all of the steps to link up with the publisher, and then through the research and writing and recipe testing, it was about 3 years till it was published. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of research
workers
in there.
Yeah,
yeah, and you have a whole section on grilling fruits. How do you go from... I mean, do you have to use two grills to go from dirtied with barbecue sauce or something on one to cleaning it up and grilling banana splits you have here?
That is one way of keeping the grill clean, you know, just like you would with cutting boards, designating two grills, if you have two grills, one for meat and one for, say, vegetables or fish. But if you keep your grill, any grill, clean, you should be able to grill just about anything on it.
Right. Yeah. Here's grilled feta stuffed figs. I mean, I guess what I was trying to say... Oh, I bet they are.
Yeah, those are delicious.
They look good. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that in addition to all the technique involved and all that kind of handbook for technique and equipment and so forth, your recipes are very interesting.
Yeah, well, we tried to include a big range of flavors in there and things that you wouldn't normally put together or foods that you wouldn't necessarily have on the grill, like spicy brown sugar quail stuffed with cheese grits wrapped in bacon, you know, or orange anise duck breast with plum butter sauce. Just some delicious combinations that you might not think would be great on a grilled food. There's just so much you can do on the grill. We really try to explore that fully.
Right. I mean, I think this is great. I'd love to have an outdoor kitchen and live in a warm climate.
Right.
Yeah. So now, how about some details on this? You're already on our webpage, and people can go and just click on your book and order it.
Yes.
And so they
And we're doing a blog on the Chronicle page.
Oh, that's right.
Chronicle Books.
I wanted to ask you about that, and I clearly forgot about it. You were going around grilling, aren't you?
Yes, we are, all summer long.
Okay. Are you in the same place now?
We're both in Pennsylvania, but we're in different buildings.
Yes, and we'll be together in Pennsylvania in a few days.
Right.
And then next week, we're somewhere else. So every few days we are traveling and talking about the book and grilling and trying to find people who are as grill crazy as we are.
Oh, so that's and what are you doing with your blog?
Writing stories about our grill travels and people we meet and places where we eat. We're on a quest for fire of sorts, trying to find out what kind of grilling is done in the different places that we go to. So in the blog, we're reporting on those. And we're also doing a little bit of, I'd say, philosophizing about what it means to be on tour.
I see. And what have been the high points so far?
A couple of great
meals. Well, we just started.
No highlights yet?
We had some wonderful meals. We did go to a grill restaurant in Chicago that's owned by Weber Grills, which was a great representation of American backyard grilling brought into a restaurant setting. That was good. And we went to the barbecue show in Reno a few weeks ago, which was an awesome overview of the grilling and barbecuing and outdoor cooking industry. And that was kind of exciting to see what's happening in grills right now.
Oh, the equipment yourself or just...
Yeah.
Right, okay.
You had mentioned an outdoor kitchen.
Yeah, that's what I'd always...
The other thing we're doing is that near the end of the summer, we're going to be teaching a certified grill master course using our book as the text, where anyone who wants to can sign up and we'll teach them how to become a grill master. And we're certifying people as grill masters.
I see you have a stamp on this book, the certified grill master. Is this something you dreamed up?
This is something that we're actually working with the Hearth, Patio, and Barbecue Association right now to develop the foundation for the certification program. And that we're teaching the first class, as Andy mentioned, out in California. And it's set up kind of like a getaway for people who love to grill. It's in a beautiful setting, and at the end of it, you are certified as a grill master.
Ingenious, absolutely ingenious. Right. You didn't give us the website, did you?
That is for the class. It's copia.org.
Oh, you're at Copia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
The class will be, it's in August. I think it's like the third week of August.
Okay. So,
yes.
Listeners, if you're interested in becoming a certified master griller, check out www.copia.org, is it?
That's it.
And
okay.
If you get certified, everybody who gets certified gets a certified Grillmaster steak brand.
It's really cool. It's a branding iron, and it's got the CGM Certified Grillmaster logo, and it's just really cool. Great thing to have if you want to impress your barbecue guests.
And do you have, for your blog, where do people find your blog?
At chroniclebooks.com.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just chroniclebooks.com/blog.
Right.
Great.
One word, Chronicle Books.
Okay, very good. Well, I think we're beginning to run out of time, so if you have, like, a last word, each of you, how about David, who we lost for a little bit?
Okay, well, what's exciting about this book is that it's really the first book to reveal the science of grilling. You had mentioned all of the information up front and the detailed and interesting headnotes at the recipes. That's mostly what we discuss throughout the book is why you get a better crust on a steak over charcoal or wood versus gas because of the hydrogen content in natural gas.
So this is your take on kitchen science.
Yes, it is.
Grilling science.
It's using science to understand the method better so you can grill better and make better grilled food and avoid burning things, know what will burn and when and why. So all of that information is in there, and it's intended to just improve your freedom at the grill so you can play with recipes and use some of the ideas in the book to make your own recipe.
Okay, listen, I think the music is going to come up and chase us out of here. So I want to thank you. Here comes the music. I want to thank you, too, and have a good tour. I think you'll have fun.
Thanks. Good
thank
talking
you,
to you.
And good talking to you. Bye-bye. And listeners, next time, same time. Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.